independent in thought, and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
I don't think we should pass bills that we haven't read, that we don't know what they cost. And if you rush this thing through before anybody even knows what it is, that's not good democracy. That's not doing our work for our constituents.
That was from about 9 years ago. That was our good friend and yours, Paul Ryan. Ryan Carey yesterday squeaked by in the House, headed down to the Senate. Joining us now, Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. He joins us every Friday. All right, Jim, it squeaked by the hair of its chinny chin chin, but let's be 100% honest, it's not going to look anything like this when and if it ever gets out of the Senate.
No, it won't. The Senate will put its own little touches on it, and then they'll go to committee, as you did with your earlier bit with the thank you for Schoolhouse Rocking it there, but on how a bill becomes a law. But yeah, no, the Senate's going to put its own changes on it. It'll be interesting to see if even then they'll be able to get through the Senate, because they're not necessarily all that interested, I think, in passing replace and repeal.
That is, I mean, look, if you're in Congress, you did everything you possibly could. If the Senate doesn't do anything, you can say, hey, you can't bitch at me, it's them. And so now you can point back and forth, and there's a lot more moderates down there. And people, here's the one thing, they're listening to their constituents when it comes to, we don't want this, that, and the other. We want this to be left alone here. We don't want you to touch that. People are afraid, whether it's real or not, the perception is that this could be a bad thing for their health care, and it's better the devil you do than the devil you don't. And I think that's going to be, I don't think it's ever going to get out of it.
No, I would not be surprised if it did stay in the Senate and just kind of get bottled up and they're not able to come up with a compromise. Because remember, though, this is also as much about health insurance as it is health care, and probably more about health insurance. This isn't going to change procedures you can do or any types of surgery. It's going to be more about your coverage, what it's going to cost, what you're going to get for that coverage. It's not about whether you're going to get better medical care. It's about medical insurance.
See, I look at it, it's the way I look at healthcare for a lot of people out there, it's about premiums. Because most people, it's about their premiums. It's too expensive. It's costing them. Many people out there in the country are paying as much for their premiums as they are for their mortgage, and it's hurting them. They don't care about the back end because they're not going to use it that much, but it's about the premiums, and that is the one thing that they really need to figure out. How the hell do you address that?
Right. The whole problem is a cost issue, regardless from top to bottom, from the premiums to the deductibles, which have now exploded into insane amounts that no reasonable person, that even they're getting if they're getting subsidized Obamacare, they still aren't able to get actual health care because of the insane deductibles. It's about making it more competitive. It's about making insurance across state lines. It's about maybe having a Bill of Rights where you are required to produce before you go in for a surgery what it's going to cost, other hospitals in the area, what their success rates are, and maybe what they also charge for similar procedures. It's like the old MRI story where if you have health insurance, it's $400. If you walk up without health insurance and can't pay, it's $1,800. If you walk up with $900 in cash, it's $900 in cash.
Yeah.
It's the same service for three different people at three different prices. That's kind of price discriminating in an economic term, and that really should not be the way it is with our healthcare coverage.
Producer Phil, I want you to get a pen and pencil out. I came up with another great idea.
All right.
You ready for it?
Yep.
How about we do like a Travelocity or Trivago for health insurance? Oh, boom! Dude, somebody quick, grab that. And if anybody steals my idea, I'm going to come over to your house and I'm going to punch you right in the gullet.
Isn't it called healthcare.gov?
No, I'm talking, how great would that be, though? Like, that's a great idea.
No, go a little further.
Yeah.
MRIs.
Yeah.
Travelocity for MRIs.
Yeah, or just any of those
Heart
things.
Surgery.
Oh, my God, I'm leaving. Yeah. I got other things to do. This Dog and Pony Show. Jim, here's the Jim Kennedy Show.
See, that's what we were talking about earlier. Is healthcare going to become like the airline industry? So you go and you can have your basic economy diagnosis, but if you'd like medicine or two medicines, then there's going to be a charge for that.
Probably.
Well, I think Chad, the point you brought up earlier about kind of going to a two-tier system where you'll have basically public coverage for most people, and that those that can afford it will have like their concierge / private medicine type of setup. And I think that's probably what the way it'll break down, because I don't see Elon Musk going to a government-owned hospital and waiting 3 weeks to have his gallbladder out if he needs it. I think people like that are going to have a way with their amount of money to get the health care coverage that they want when they want it.
It just goes to show you, Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is here with us. It just goes to show you something, though, Jim. And I think this is very real, is that the more that you try to make things fairer and equal, and as the Democrats scream, what do they think is going to happen? Like you said, do you think Elon Musk, do you think somebody making $500,000 a year is just going to go down to, like, here in L.A., the Harbor General, when they can go to a doctor? You're making – no, they're not. They're going to go pay for it in a first-class way to take care of it. And that's always going to be that way. People with more money will always have better stuff. Doesn't matter what it is. Are we going to give everybody the same car? No. Somebody drives a Ferrari. Somebody drives a Pinto. That's the world we live in.
No, absolutely. Someone drives a Tesla, in fact, too. But yeah, no, it's going to be like that. We're going to break it down. It's, well, one of the thoughts that I had when Obamacare first passed, because it was so badly crafted, I believe that they intended for it to fail, that they knew in 5, 7, or 10 years this thing would implode upon itself, and they figured at that time, okay, well, you know what? The capitalist system doesn't work. Government, you know, handled healthcare doesn't work. The only solution is the public option at this point. Single payer, socialized medicine, it's the only solution. We've got to do it.
Well, you know what? Last night, Charles Krauthammer was on talking about it and the entire thought process about whether or not America's really ready for it.
There's an irony and a hidden victory here. Over these last 7 years, people's expectations have changed. You watched the debate over the last 3 months, Dr. Tucker. What are the grounds? The grounds are all liberal grounds. How many people are going to lose their coverage? How can you leave people out in the cold? The Jimmy Kimmel thing. It's showing that the country is at a point where I think it believes in universal coverage. And once you are there, the ground is shifted, and Republicans and conservatives are going to have a hard time arguing for a consumer-based, market-oriented healthcare system. We're in a different world.
We are in a different world. And I think people are – two things here. I think people realize that it's going to eventually outpace them no matter what they do and no matter how well they're doing it, unless they're working for a company. And at what point in time do companies start to break as well, where it becomes ridiculous? Second thing is, I think the confusion and frustration, they're just over it, right? We want something simpler now. And I think the public-private option is a great opportunity to come in. And like I said, you get young first, second, third, fourth-year doctors. You put them in an opportunity where you say, we're going to pay off your medical debt. We're going to pay off your stuff. You work for us under a couple doctors that are a bit older. And there's got to be ways to do it that are smart. This isn't going to work forever. And I do blame the insurance companies and the medical companies for feeding at the trough as long as they have. And they're looking back and they're thinking, well, we've got another – you know, now that we've kind of fixed this, maybe it's going to be great. They don't realize it's broken and it's probably going to collapse on itself no matter what we do.
Right, because the overriding problem isn't insurance coverage, it's cost. Like I said, what it costs for an MRI and even any of those prices is extremely expensive for what you get for the, I mean, for what the MRI machine and all that costs if you do it over the number of times you can use an MRI machine, et cetera, et cetera. And the cost problem has to be addressed. Even if we go to single payer, that's not addressing the cost problem. That still doesn't address the problem of I want bypass surgery and it's $400,000, unless the government's going to come in and say, okay, well, fine, but we only pay you $100,000 for bypass surgery. So St. John's Hospital, if you want bypass surgery paid for, you mark it down to $100,000, or the government doesn't cover it. Now, they could go that way, too, but, you know, it's going to be problematic. We got to address the cost of this, got to address the cost of health care. And I've talked with very smart people about this, and we just kind of sit there all walking away with shaking our heads because it's not a simple answer, because it's not a normal good where it's like, okay, well, the price of a car is too expensive. You don't get a car or you get a cheaper car. Well, it's health care. It's like, if I need cancer surgery, I need cancer surgery. Maybe I could go to a third world country and get some guy that might have graduated medical school to do it. But short of that, it's something that you need. It's not just like a luxury good. It's like food and water and shelter. You must have it when you need it.
Yeah.
And you can't just rely on a competitive marketplace to provide in situations like that. And it's problematic.
Especially, and we're gonna pick this up on the other side. Jim Kennedy's here with the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. We're talking all things healthcare and politics this week. He's going to be here for a while, so I've got a bunch of stuff I want to ask him, and we just talked about that, about the cost process, and I've got a question to throw out there, because I think he addressed something, and it's the one thing that we joked about a little while ago that Phil wrote down that's missing. 844-DIG-CHAD.
You can text the program 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. Jim Kennedy's with us. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Feeling confused? No worries. That's why he's here. This is the Chad Benson Show, setting things straight.
Ah, Jim Kennedy's with us. We're talking about healthcare and the politics of the week. You know, Jim, you were talking before we went to break. We were talking about, you know, the cost of medicine. And as I said earlier, the problem with the cost is it's so secretive in the way that they do things. It's about transparency. That's where we need to go after. That's why I joked about it. But why not have a medical thing like that that we can expose and therefore give people the real, you know, skinny, so they can go back and say, wait a minute, you charged me $3,000. Over here, they're charging $100, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I agree 100%. I put together a healthcare bill of rights, and that's one of the things that are on it, is basically transparency, the ability to know ahead of time, what do you charge for a bypass operation? Sure, complications occur, things happen, surgeries are a little bit different than all of them. Put it out there and say, okay, look, without any extraordinary circumstances, this is what we charge. This is what the aftercare is. This is what the doctor charges, what the anesthesiologist charges. This is what the heart and lung machine, et cetera, et cetera. Do it for any procedure out there. You'd be required to produce that to anybody who requests it, along with, if you want to talk about quality also, is what's your success rate? What's your failure rate? How many deaths do you have from this operation? But definitely on the cost side, absolutely. Make it published, put it out there. Like you said, make it a Travelocity. Basically, who do you know, who's got the lowest cost within 50 miles for a hernia operation?
Yeah. You know, and you talk about, you know, the success rate, but like you can look at it like, would you go to a dinner and they hand you a menu and everybody's going to order, we're going to all order the same thing, right? Maybe somebody's going to have, like, we're going to order a burger. You have pickles and tomatoes. I'm not this, that, and the other. But all of us are going to get different prices basically for the same damn thing.
Yep.
And that's what medicine is. And there's this secretiveness about the healthcare industry because it's built to be confusing.
I don't know if it is, but it certainly is. I don't, you know, because I don't know if that's the intent, but it is. And the problem too is obviously when you get your bill, what are you going to do? Oh, well, I'm not paying that. Okay, well then we'll attach a lien to your, you know, to your salary in your house. You don't really have much of a choice at that point. You can't say, well, I'm not paying. So that's why it needs to be done up front. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It is complicated. And there's all these codes on there for things. It turns out to be, you know, a CD-2416. Oh, that's an aspirin. But it's got some code on it. And by the way, you paid $4 an aspirin, too.
Yeah. Well, or as much as they can get. And see, the thing is, like, and for those of you who don't, this is what's great about the confusion of the medical industry. They charge you $10 for an aspirin. The person, the insurance company says no. That's not $10. We'll give you $3 for an aspirin. They said that's fine. It cost them a nickel for the aspirin. They've made $2.95, but wait, there's more. They then write off the $7 that they charge you as a loss. So they're making money all the way around and they're saving taxes. It's a giant game. And that's the big thing. It's about cost. In the end, zero transparency. You would never go buy. You'd never go to the restaurant and say, I want to order this, and they'll say, yeah, we'll eat it first, and then we'll tell you how much you got to pay.
Yeah, I don't think that restaurant would be around very long, but unfortunately, that's the benchmark of the healthcare system we have in America. So if you really want to make revolutionary change, let's bring transparency and a little bit more capitalism into it with competitive pricing and knowledge up front of what a procedure is going to cost you. Because you have no idea. Do you know what your doctor will charge you when you walk into his office?
No. Does anybody know?
No. Most of the people figure, oh, well, my insurance will take care of it.
They may not even know at some point in time. They may just like, well, we thought it was this. Because, again, everybody's going to be different. Everybody is going to be different because you don't know what this insurance pays, how long it's going to be. These people are paying cash. Cash is king. I mean, you just don't know, and it's confusing as hell.
And I've gone to doctors when I've had financial problems, and they've cut me deals. I mean, they've done, you know, they give me half-priced. Why? Well, because I needed, you know, because the guy, you know, he was cool about it. You know, I needed the care, and it wasn't any skin obvious because he probably was going to double up the next patient to make off of me what he didn't, or make off of them what he didn't make off of me.
It is insane. Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Who's going to be the bugaboo in the Senate that's going to just say no?
Is it Ted Corcoran? Cruz?
Ted Cruz, you think?
Ted Cruz could be.
Like, what is it? Is it not enough for him? Does he want it?
I think he wants more free markets being brought into it, and I'm not sure that they're gonna want to do that. I need to take a little bit more at the bill, because I am like the rest of the Congress. I have not yet read the bill, so I need to do that along with my fellow congressman. Probably.
One thing I noticed, I read as much. I mean, it's way too big, but I did not see the "let's have competition by going across the state lines," which is what people have been clamoring for forever and a day.
No, absolutely. Especially, you know, you've got to be able to add more people to that pool. The bigger the pool, the bigger you can spread the risks out, and the cheaper you can get insurance. I can't imagine. Can you imagine if you have a cancer epidemic in Wyoming, what rates would be up there?
Yeah.
We only got like 435,000 people in a state.
And not only that, you know, one of the other things that's not talked about is the fact that can we pool? You know, because that was the big thing, is we allow individuals now to pool. If you're a business owner, you could pool with all the other business owner, therefore eliminating a good portion of the risk, spreading it out amongst the people, driving premiums down. Never heard anything about any of that stuff in there. And to me, I just scratch my head.
Like I said, it's all about health insurance. It's not about the cost of health care itself.
Jim Kennedy's with us. Jim, you're going to stick through here, yeah?
Sure.
Jim's got no way. We're keeping Jim for probably the rest of this hour, so just have to deal with it. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, ChadBensonShow, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. We're not letting Jim go anywhere, and the reason is because we've got a great story that we're hearing from Phil that we only got partially through, right? We almost got his arrest story, and we got more stories coming, but you guys can't hear those awesome stories because they're not for radio. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, ChadBensonShow, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can check out the podcast, simple and easy. Go to ChadBensonShow.com. Guess what, kids? It's free. Don't charge you a penny. That's how we roll here at the Chad Benson Show on this beautiful Cinco de Mayo Friday. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
It is the Chad Benson Show on this beautiful, gorgeous Cinco de Mayo Friday. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us. All right, Jim, so we've talked enough about healthcare ad nauseum there. Let's move on from there and talk politics outside of that. My numbers look good today. Economic 221. They thought 185. They'll revise that up or down a few thousand, blah, 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 blah. 3%. If he does 3%, he's in this thing for a while, if he wants it, because I think he may bail after 4 years, because I think he's getting bored. But Obama didn't have 3%. He's the only president that hasn't got 3%. And I think with tax reform and real tax reform, like Reagan, or yes, dare I say, for all you Democrats out there, like Kennedy did, and we saw our two biggest boom times with Kennedy and Reagan, how about we see another 3%, maybe 3.5% growth? This, to me, is as important as anything.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting you bring up 3%. It's interesting how we've kind of accumulated a new normal out of this. During Reagan, 3% was a bad year. Now we're just praying we can get the 3% because of how bad it's been over the last 10 years. 211,000 is a good number, but it's not great. We got to start getting 300,000, 400,000 new jobs out there. That's really where we got to get to, and I don't see how we're going to get there, but we really need to get it going. I don't know about you, but at 4.4%, have you ever seen as many unhappy and scared people about their jobs and the economy?
Well, no, because first of all, we all know it's really probably 6.5% to 7%, because those numbers are
kind of where it's going. Yeah.
But on top of that, it's still not the kind of jobs that people want and need. Now, the energy sector's booming. The coal, they brought back like 50,000, I think, coal jobs have come back, some ridiculous over the last, 3-4 months as he's undone these regulations. So that's fine. But no, like you said, adding a job here or there, if it's not $20 an hour, $25 an hour, $30 an hour, depending on where you live, it really means nothing.
A lot of these numbers also, just for a baseline for the listeners, 150,000, 175,000 jobs is what you need on a monthly basis to stay even with the number of people entering the economy that are turning 18 and coming into the workforce. So 211,000 is good. That means we basically are net reducing unemployment for that month. But we've, you know, there have been months in the past you've run 700,000 with smaller numbers of people out there, 600,000, 500,000. So this is not a robust economy. It's just not as bad an economy as it has been. And people get very, very psychologically set on these things. And they get concerned because they still see people getting laid off. And they still see people while they're working, like you said. Yeah, but they're working two part-time jobs to get to 40 hours. They're not working a 40-hour job making 85 grand a year. They're working two 20-hour jobs making maybe 17, 50 an hour at each job.
Yeah, and you can't – and that is – first of all, it's not quality of life. Let's talk about just the quality of life. I'm a workaholic, so there's no balance for me. I know what I do. I spend my time with my son. Those are important. But I love what I do, but people like balance because people aren't going to be – very few people want to work 50, 60, 70, 8 hours a week. They want some balance. And making $20 essentially an hour, but it really you're only making 10 working two jobs, that sucks. And that's not a good way to live your life.
No, it's not. Like you said, you choose to be a workaholic because you choose to. Other people, unfortunately, are having to work 50 or 60 hours just to keep themselves afloat. They're not doing it by choice. I mean, they're doing it by choice, but out of necessity of choice. And that's why this really isn't that good of an economy. Hopefully, the tax plan will help stimulate the economy somewhat. Bringing that $1.5 trillion overseas back will help for a number of the companies.
Two and a half trillion.
It grows every week. Every week it gets more and more.
Well, they're like, Apple's like, oh, I forgot to tell you. We had this other account. It's a little account. It only had like $500 billion in it. But $2.5 trillion, bringing that back, I mean, and, you know, what do you think they're going to tax that at?
Trump wants a 15% corporate rate. They got to bring it back at less than that. They'll probably bring it back at 10, then, I would guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of that's a nice little kick in the pants.
$250 billion into the federal treasury, too.
Yeah. And then you look around and you say, okay, cool, we got $250 billion here. But on top of that, you guys now have money that you can reinvest back into your firms and your businesses here. It's Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is in. Jim, we were joking about it earlier. You know, Kim Jong-un was a little quiet this week because we had a lot of other stuff going on. Which usually is scary. It's like a kid, right? Like if you have kids, you know this. When it gets quiet is when you get scared the most because that's when they're doing something they're not supposed to. When you hear them screaming and yelling at each other, you're like, oh, that's normal. But when it gets quiet, you're like, what are they? He's gotten quiet. Although he did come out today and said that he thinks that they stopped a plot by the CIA to kill him using chemical gas warfare or something. I told producer Phil, do you think people just go to him and say, oh, I totally uncovered a plot, and I'm in your good graces. Please don't kill me with a giant, huge gun in front of a large amount of people.
I would not doubt. I mean, that is the land of crazy over there. Anything to basically keep yourself in the goodwill and the good graces of the Kimster is definitely something you want to do. And someone made a comment about, well, it's probably true, though he doesn't know that it's actually true. They probably just said it without any basis. In fact. And in fact, the CIA would be irresponsible if they weren't trying to have a plot to kill him, because you do want him to go away. And I know you talk about the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know, but do you really see it getting worse if you run him out and you kill him and you make somebody else take over that position?
No, I don't.
I just don't see it getting any worse.
Yeah, you know, it's not like you look at the Germans and you think, well, you know, Goering and Himmler and all of these. You know, they may potentially have carried on. Himmler probably would have and stuff. But you look and you say, okay, maybe somebody competent would have came in behind there and actually dragged the war on for longer because they would have do what they were doing. So maybe you didn't want to kill him. Here, it's like you don't know any of these guys. And they know, and you're thinking to yourself, there's no way anybody could be as insane as this character.
No, you'd hope that some of them would listen about putting down the nuclear weapons, not pushing us to the nuclear brink anymore because – you know, we have to keep reacting to this and the world has to keep reacting. He's gone after China and China doesn't really seem to care anymore. China doesn't really seem to care anymore about what is going on about him, about his stability in office. So it's going to be, you know, interesting. He's I would suspect that you will hear something from him in the next 5 days, above and beyond the Americans are trying to kill me, which really in North Korea, is that really new news?
Yeah, no, I don't think. Well, I mean, what did you think we weren't?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that would have been bigger news, is we're not trying to kill you. Of course we're trying to kill you. Like, absolutely. You can put that in your pipe and smoke it. We're trying to kill you. There's somebody somewhere trying to hatch a plan right now on how to kill your ass. We don't know what it is, but we're trying. So, you know what? Think of the map pulse. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is here with us. Okay, so Elijah Cummings the other day, the wonderful, the great Elijah, rolled over to past Paul Ryan's office and started laughing, saying, look, they got enough votes to pass this thing. And it's not about the health care in itself, but what he did say is because of that, you know, looks like we have a chance of taking some seats back. He's right, man. I'm telling you, nobody wants this damn thing. It is kryptonite.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, I believe the Democrats started singing Hey, Hey, Goodbye on the floor of the House after the bill passed, thinking that, like, when they got run out of office after Obamacare, the Republicans will be. But someone brought up the point. I don't think the Republicans are going to run their own people out of office for voting for something that they promised that they would do. It's an accomplishment. Now, maybe if you lose your coverage, you might have a problem with it 4 or 6 years down the road. But again, as you said, this is not going to be tomorrow. You're not going to walk out tomorrow and have a notice in your mailbox saying your insurance has been canceled because of the Republican vote in the House this week. It's got to go to the first of all. It's not a law yet, folks. It's a House bill that's been passed. Okay. Got to go to the Senate like we talked about. Then it's going to go to conference committee. Go out and Google Schoolhouse Rock and you'll explain the rest of it to you if you don't watch Stephen Colbert. And it will not affect you, for months at best, and probably years at worst. So don't worry about it, folks. Go on leading your life and be more concerned about the fact you don't know what your MRI is going to cost you.
Do you think, though, that there is some fear amongst the Republicans that they're going to lose some here? And then the gridlock, what kind of gridlock are we looking at? If they ended up losing some seats and all of a sudden, you know, they don't have the Senate anymore. And it's closer, you know, when it comes to Congress. I mean, what are you looking at then?
Well, lots of things to look at. Remember, midterm elections are always bad for incumbents. So statistically, the Republicans should lose seats in both the House and the Senate just because of historical precedent. Now, because of redistricting, there are so few seats out there that are really toss-up seats that, short of some sort of a revolution, the Republicans are not going to have that many seats at risk in the House. It would be extremely difficult, barring some sort of great collapse, for the Republicans to lose the House, because they've got about a 60-seat majority right now. So it's pretty solid. On the Senate side, I would say yes. If the Senate passes this, there could be a lot of damage. The problem is there are an extraordinary number of, if you look back from what 2018 would have, 6 years would have been 2012, Obama's second term dragged in a number of Democrats in the Senate. Those freshmen are all up for re-election, along with an extraordinary number of Democrats in general. They have to defend a heck of a lot of seats. So statistically, they are not going to be able to put a dent into the Republican majority. And the fact the Republicans are well-placed right now, all things being considered, to pick up 2 or 3 or 4 seats in the Senate. So you could be looking at close to, it's not predictable that they can get to 60 seats, but they could possibly pick up enough seats that gets them over 55 or 56 after the 2018 midterms.
Jim Kennedy's with us from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Jim, did you get your mom anything for Mother's Day yet?
I have a card planned that we'll be sending out to her next week.
A card?
A card.
Jim, let me tell you about Sherry's Berries, Jim. You're going to be doing this, and you better use my code Benson. $19.99, giant, delectable, tasty berries that are incredible. They're huge. They're the size of your fist. On top of that, for $19.99 plus shipping, you get this amazing, incredible berry full of chocolate goodness and just drizzled on the outside, milk chocolate. You're going to love it. Your mother's going to love it, and she bore you, so you should do this, Jim. Plus, you can double the berries for $10, and with that, you're going to get free cake truffles. And your mother gave birth to you, and you're giving her a card?
Maybe I should do Sherry's Berries.
You should do Sherry's Berries. Juicy, sweet, giant. They're for you. They're amazing. The only way you can get this incredible, amazing deal right now, starting at $19.99, is visit berries.com. Click on the microphone top right-hand corner and use code Benson. That's Berries, B-E-R-R-I-E-S, code Benson when you click on the mic. This amazing deal, it's not going to last forever. Don't be Jim, but Jim's going to save himself. Be better than Jim and be better than me because I screw up a lot of times when it comes to stuff like this. Go to berries.com, use code Benson. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. We'll wrap it up straight ahead. It's the Chad Benson Show.
If you like talk radio like Chad Benson likes his meals, you've come to the perfect place for takeout.
I like him saucy, too. Like her. She sounds saucy. I wonder if she looks good. I don't know who the voiceover lady is for us, but I wonder if she looks delicious. She sounds a bit delicious. Am I right, Phil?
She sounds very delicious.
She does. I wonder. She's probably 480 pounds. Chad, you're such a jerk. Cinco de what? You know, we were talking off air about Hillary, and you pointed out something that is so true. She's spent 30 years next to maybe the greatest politician of our lifetime, whether you like him or not, and one of the great orators as far as reaching people on an individual level, and she didn't pick up a damn thing from that guy.
No, absolutely not. There is nobody,
except for VD.
Well, there's nobody better when it comes to doing I Feel Your Pain. And actually having people, you know, connect with that. Like you said, that's what, you know, people connected with Trump on that same level, even though he's a billionaire. Bill was, he's incredibly astute at that, and he knows what it takes to connect with those people and to get them to trust you and like you, regardless of how much of a philanderer you are. And Hillary has learned evidently none of that in however many years she's been married to Bill. You'd think of all of the trouble she's gone through with him, she would have at least gotten that benefit of being next to him and seeing him be able to connect to those audiences for that period of time to become as astute as he is at politics. But no, none of it sunk into her. Either she's arrogant and thought that she knew better and had to do it her way, or I don't know what, but she's just not able to do it, and she's not trustworthy. She never comes across as warm. She's not likable. She's tolerable at best. And it just is something that's just been amazing to me how she cannot figure this out. I mean, I can watch someone for 5 minutes and probably learn something from them. For 35 years, she learned nothing standing next to Bill with his political acumen that he's got.
Talking to Jim Kennedy for the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research, as we talk about, let's wrap things up this week, you know, and because she was out talking about still trying to figure out why she lost, and the Democrats are still trying to figure out why they lost. And you know what? You think to yourself, like, what was it? What were you like 40 years ago when you and Bill were first together? So what were you like at some point in time? Did something switch over when you and you or were you always like this? I wonder that.
I think she was always like this. I think she's been like this. I don't think she's learned a lot. I think, you know, she's an accomplished woman. She was one of the first, you know, early days of women in high-end law schools. She was successful in her law career. She was a partner at the Rose Law Firm. Now, of course, Bill was governor. That might not have hurt any. But she was very successful in what she did. That doesn't mean that you're going to be a good politician.
No.
Okay? And those are very different skills. Being able to connect with people. And I don't know how she did as a lawyer, whether she was just very clinical and very, you know, she read the law, she knew the law, I just don't see her going into a courtroom and being like John Edwards, even. Remember John Edwards?
Yeah.
And his ability with all the lawsuits he won and his folksiness. I could see him being really good in a courtroom and really
sweet haircut
and communicating with the jury.
And how he cheated on his wife who had cancer. Super solid individual. But you're right.
He and Bill.
He had a connection with
He knew how to connect with voters and people.
You know, and
either a jury or voters.
And I just love the point the finger at everybody's fault. And to this day, Axelrod said it this week, you know what? You better turn your finger around and point at yourself. You lost because of you.
Yes. Not the Russians, not James Comey, not Huma Abedin or Anthony Weiner. You lost because of you. And you lost because you didn't listen to the guy standing next to you for 40 years who probably was telling you what to do to salvage it. It didn't take that much. And also, visits to Michigan, Wisconsin, and Ohio would not have hurt you either.
Yeah, that would absolutely help. And it just, I've never seen people who are completely just oblivious to things. And it's like as there was a joke about like why I remember watching Daniel Tosh, the comic, talk about like Kobe. Was like, man, people are still booing me, man. Why are people still booing me? Because that thing in Colorado? No, not because of the thing in Colorado. Really? Because of that? No, no. Yeah, it's oblivious to their surroundings. And I think, you know, that's because you get to that point where you're so big that maybe it's just everything is handed to you and you just don't know how to live a regular life.
Right. Well, she's been in a bubble for 25 years. She hasn't driven a car in 25 years because of being first lady and then senator and all that. So she definitely lives in a bubble, but Bill has a little bit more ability to see beyond that bubble. It was something they said that Lincoln had an absolute innate skill to basically take himself when he was in a situation and take himself outside of that and look at himself from the outside as not Lincoln, to see what was going on around him and what he was doing and what were the other factors that were involved. And they said, there are people that said that he was absolutely amazing at that ability to understand that. And that's something that Hillary misses in spades.
All right. Jim Kennedy's name. You can follow him at Righty Jim. You can follow me at Chad Benson Show. Another solid week. Anthony will be back on Monday. He's in Georgia doing his Georgia thing. For Anthony, for Phil, for Jim, my name's Chad Benson. I bid you all adieu. Be safe. Night-night, Jack.
This is the Chad Benson Show.